commissioner is out of town this week up at a conference on the zoo, the Zoological Society, and also Councilman Moreno is at a national business conference, I believe. So with, other than that, let's go ahead with the roll call.
Councilmember Bourbeau.
Here.
Councilmember Sturdivant.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzi.
Here.
Mayor O'Malley.
Here.
Four present. Thank you.
So moved. Second.
I have a motion by Councilman Sturdivant, second by Councilmember Bourbeau. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Sturdivant.
Yes.
Councilmember Bourbeau.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzi.
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley.
Yes.
Motion passes.
And my understanding is we were going to have a presentation on GAR Constitution Week. However, I believe the person is not here this evening, so we're going to present that at a different time. So we will forego the presentation, taking us on to the consent calendar, made up of routine items that should be able to take care of with a single vote, unless a member of the council would like to talk about it more or a member of the public.
I move approval of the consent calendar.
I will second.
We have a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Fonzi, second by Councilmember Bourbeau. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Bourbeau.
Yes.
Councilmember Sturdivant.
Yes, I must abstain from number one as I was not here for that meeting, but number two, yes.
Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem Fonzi.
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley.
Yes.
Motion passes.
Next thing is updates from our city manager, but she's out of state, so or at least out of the county. So we'll take that up next time. We have a lot more to report on. And it takes us to our community forum, which is an opportunity for any of you to speak to all of us on anything that's not on the agenda and yet under our jurisdiction. So please come forward. And Councilman Clay, if you were, hey, Jerry.
Yes.
If you're going to speak on the item you're talking about, why don't I go ahead and have Roberta Fonzi read a little bit about Lighthouse and then have you take it from there, if that's all right. Okay, let's do that. And give a little, I know Councilman Clay has been involved with Lighthouse program for a while, and Councilman Moreno would have been helping out here, give a little more background. She's not here this evening, so I've asked.
She's next.
Yes, Heather Moreno, I believe, is on the board. However, Mayor Pro Tem Fonzi, give us a little bit of a background on the Lighthouse project. I would say that we're, of course, Kiwanis is very proud to have contributed over $60,000 on our last fundraising activity to a startup program underneath the foundation and part of Lighthouse. So let's get a little background about that for Mr. Clay.
I would mention that this is not an item on the agenda, so the comments need to be necessarily brief, and it won't be a discussion item. So certainly, Councilmember Fonzi can make a brief comment, and then Mr. Clay can, that'll supplement Mr. Clay's comment.
Yes, so I've worn out my welcome, and we will now move on to the rest of the public comment. Thank you.
Well, no, Councilmember Fonzi can make a comment.
Yeah.
Yes.
Very good.
Thank you. Yes, Lighthouse has been in place since 2012. It's an offshoot of the Greyhound Foundation, and it was formed to fund additional counseling for high school students, and the mission has been central to the foundation for this period of time, over 6 years. It's in its second year of Lighthouse, a Tascadero mentorship program with LAMP director Julie Davis, leading another group of high school upperclassmen as mentors to the Tascadero Middle School. There's also something new going on with Lighthouse. They are providing resources for reading, including books, articles, publications, and podcasts designed to help individuals and families in the area of drug and alcohol addiction. And the purpose behind Lighthouse is a diversion or a mentorship to avoid opiate and drug and alcohol deaths and problems. It's been a very good program. It's done great things for our community, and it's really been an excellent help in this period of opioid addiction. And I know Jerry is going to talk to us about the Lighthouse Atascadero Benefit Golf Tournament called Making a Difference. It's coming up Saturday, October 13th, 2018. Let's hit it, Jerry.
Thank you.
Thank you, Roberta. Anybody who says these golden years are golden, it's a bunch of baloney. I'd say it's more rust color than anything else. But anyway, as Roberta said, Lighthouse got started in 2012. There was over 12 OD deaths the year before Lighthouse started. 12 young people in our community died of opiate OD deaths. And Don Clickard, he said, I don't want to go to do another eulogy on one of the students that I knew. And anyway, one of the prominent fellows in our community kicked in $120,000 to get Lighthouse going, and anonymously, and he had lost his son, and that's really the reason way it got started. Okay. Addiction affects everybody. I'm going to tell you, there's probably no woman, man, or child that isn't affected by addiction in one way or the other. Either you have a friend, you have a family member, or something like that. And certainly myself, I lost my grandson, Ricky Sims, and he was a great kid and, you know, loved him to death. And he's forever 19 years old, but because of drugs and alcohol. Okay, here we go. Lighthouse started out with 12 students. They were addicted to opiates, and they were at the Del Rio school, and they intensified program to get them off. And I can here to tell you that 11 of them are doing fine to this day. And in fact, one student came back and actually told the counselors that they saved his life. You know, so the 12th one I'm not sure on, but that's how it started. 5 years ago, my grandson, Jeremy, who I'm very proud of, come to me and he said, Grandpa, he said, I'm tired of reading about kids that I went to school with that have died of OD deaths in the paper. He said, I want to do something. So we started the Lighthouse Golf Tournament. And what they did is, it was more for awareness than anything, because Joel gave a very reasonable rate, $40 with a cart and a barbecue meal and so on. And the idea was just to get the word out about Lighthouse. And we really, the way we make our money is whole sponsors. And you can sponsor a whole for $100. And, you know, I mean, we've had people in the last 5 years that have kicked in $2,500 or more, you know, because they lost somebody. And believe me, this opiate thing, it crosses, it doesn't matter whether you're across the tracks or up on the west side, you know, it crosses all economic people. But
Jerry, thanks. Let me make note of how you can get in touch with folks on this.
Go for it.
And again, it's got, you can first call Don Clickard, or you can call directly to Chalk Mountain Golf Course. The golf course's phone number is 466-8848.
Right.
And then you can get any information about signing up there again. 466-8848. And I'm sure we'll be hearing more about this.
Yeah. Okay, I wanted to say a couple other things. To me, a Lighthouse is in the business of saving lives. And the reason I say that is prior to Lighthouse, we had 12 OD deaths in 1 year. And I was talking to Joe Allen, Lieutenant Joe Allen, and he was part of the Lighthouse committee. And he told me in 2016, he said, I can only account for 2 OD deaths that year. So we went from 12, and with the awareness and the work that Lighthouse has done, to 2 deaths, which is, and county-wise, that was not the effect. I mean, the number in the county was the same. You know, it's very important. And now they've started down at the sixth grade level with this mentoring program. And also they have a program for people that are that have already graduated. You know, I talked to Don, and he said a lady called, and she said her son was 28 years old, and he was addicted. What can I do? And Don,
we really do need to get going. We have a little extra time we gave you tonight.
Okay, time out. I'll finish up, Tom.
Okay. We need to kind of keep the meeting going. We do allow 3 minutes.
Right. Okay, well, this is going to be the Wayne Cooper Memorial. Wayne was an outstanding person. It'll be the Wayne Cooper Memorial Golf Tournament for years to come. And please, if you want to donate to something that's very special, that saves lives, Lighthouse is the one. Thank you.
Just to kind of, sorry, my name is Damon Meeks, born and raised in Atascadero. I've been here my whole life. Just to kind of comment on Jerry here, I knew some of those kids that died that year, Jerry, and my business would love to sponsor a hole for you. I'll talk to you after the meeting. So, you know, I came a couple weeks ago, and so hopefully tonight I can talk a little bit better. 9/11 kind of always gets to me. The first thing I'd like to talk about are the trees. The streets and the trees in the city, this isn't the first time I've come to you guys with this problem. It's not the first time I've talked to, you know, city management about this problem. This is something that needs to get on the agenda. There is several businesses that also want to talk about this. This is something that the city has got to deal with now. There's enough businesses that are damaging their equipment. You know, I know personally I've damaged my crane, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars of damage. And this just can't continue. So I would like to do whatever we can to get it on the agenda. I don't know what processes I need to do, but, you know, this is something that needs to get taken care of. Okay, I had a whole bunch here, and Nick DeBar called me. And it kind of changed my attitude quite a bit. So I've got to bear with me here. I got to skip through a whole bunch of this. The first topic is going to be with Mr. Dunsmore. At the Planning Commission, that meeting that we had, you know, the big topic of the Planning Commission meeting was my cranes and my shop there. At that Planning Commission meeting, there was 25 people that showed up. 17 people that showed up. 16 of them were for me. 8 more of them signed the petition. That is every neighbor to my right, behind me, and all the way down to the street to the nearest cross-section street that was very clear to leave my crane alone. Okay? It was very clear. That's a 96% majority in my neighborhood. So when, you know, I got threatened not too long ago that my cranes were going to get kicked out, and then I find out that the wording in the Planning Commission meeting got changed. Mr. Dunsmore, we had a meeting with him and Mr. DeBar. He had promised me that he was going to get back to me and tell me why, when, where, how come this was changed, and at what point in time is a 96% majority of the people telling you this is what we want do we get? You know, it's not just me. It's my whole neighborhood. So I hope Mr. Dunsmore, since he won't return my calls or an email or anything, I hope you'll answer me tonight. What happened to that Planning Commission meeting? Is that possible to get an answer to this?
Thank you. Well, it's not an agendized item, so it's not something we can have a lot of discussion on or take any action. But we will.
So how do I get a response to this?
I would suggest you have submitted an email. I can ask that your emails be forwarded to council for consideration, or if you want to address the council directly, it's better to have something in an email so they can kind of follow the argument.
You know, I just went to a face-to-face meeting with them. You know what I mean? That's the best way. I'm not very good at computers. I'm not real great at email. I went to a face-to-face meeting asking why this happened. So I don't think I'm being unreasonable in asking, you know, why this happened. What are we going to do to make sure this doesn't happen again?
Well, I'll ask that we have staff address that at the end of public comment. That would be our usual
procedure. And so I hope you guys are going to give me another 3 minutes after last week.
You or had after your two 3 minutes.
So that's all I get tonight?
Yes.
Okay.
Welcome, next speaker.
Good evening, Atascadero City Council members. My name is Rick London. I'm CEO of United Way of San Luis Obispo County. Briefly, here in San Luis Obispo County, our United Way is endeavoring to safeguard the future of our community by nurturing proficiencies in reading, financial, and social-emotional literacies through our high-quality programs. We are connecting people in need to our resource and referral line 211 and 211slow.org. We are also connecting volunteers to local nonprofit agencies through our volunteerslow.org website, while our youth board is developing promising board members for those same organizations somewhere down the road. More specifically, I wanted to share with you our Real Cost Measure 2018 report, recently released by United Ways of California. The Real Cost Measure uses standardized measurements to calculate basic needs budgets, bare bones, based on individual California county profiles, the number of household members, and their individual ages. Our federal government's official poverty measure vastly understates poverty. Established over 45 years ago, the federal poverty level has two primary flaws. One, its formula is primarily based on the cost of food, and in the decades since it was created, the cost of housing, transportation, childcare, healthcare, and other family necessities has risen far more rapidly than the cost of food. And secondly, it neglects regional variations in cost of living, and most Californians live in high-cost areas. The Real Cost Measure finds that one in three households in California, over 3.3 million families, including those with income well over the federal poverty level, struggle every month to meet basic needs. In San Luis Obispo County, 29% of households live below the Real Cost Measure, with 95% of those households having at least one working adult. As a result, the true extent of families contending with deprivation is hidden. Many of these hidden poor find they earn too much money to qualify for most income supports, yet still struggle to meet their most basic needs, especially as the cost of housing, health care, and other necessities continues to rise faster than wages. The finding of the Real Cost Measure 2018 make plain that even in the midst of plenty, many Californians are struggling to stay afloat. You may go to unitedwayslo.org to get the full report, explore how our neighboring counties are doing, as well as configure your own basic needs budget. For those of you who would like a guided deeper dive into the report, the Real Cost Measure authors will be at the Copeland Health Education Pavilion at French Hospital on Tuesday, October 16th, from 2 to 4 p.m. Thank you. And if I could leave this, I've got
just leave it with the chief and he'll pass it on.
I've got the Slow County profile on here. I think you'll find it very interesting.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Any other speakers? Welcome.
Welcome. Good evening, council members and Mayor O'Malley. I'm Susan Warren. I'm with North County Connection Recovery Resource Center here in Atascadero. Okay. And I'm here tonight because, again, this September is the annual, it's like for 25 years we've been celebrating. This is the Recovery Happens Month. And I'm here because I'm giving you each a copy of this book that is called The American Fix by Ryan Hampton. It just came out on the 28th of last month, and I have read it. I have a whole library of books, but nothing has been as comprehensive or as educational as this book. This is addiction and how we got to where we are with the opioid epidemic, and he also gives us solutions. The gentleman was a political strategist. He worked in the White House. He's worked at lobbying. He's had this incredible career, broke his ankle, and got hooked on opioids, and wound up himself homeless down in Florida, in and out of rehabs. And he doesn't miss a beat, man. He looks at, you know, how we've got here, how we've criminalized it, how little the education the doctors get, 11 to 14 hours in all their years of medical study. He's, you know, a quarter of this book is everything that, it goes back to tell you all of the references and studies and things where he's pulled all of his information. He's done an incredible job on this, and I hope that each of you will take the opportunity to read this, because it is a template for us to move forward. And Jerry's working with the Lighthouse program. They're doing the preventive end over, you know, with the young people. We're still over here with our doors open for crisis intervention when the adults come in. Unfortunately, I'm glad to hear that they're reducing the kids that are dying from the opioids. But in the last 30 days, I know of four 25 to 55-year-olds, and those are only the ones I've heard about, that have passed due to the opioid epidemic. And what we don't know is, because this is silent, nobody talks about it. The stigma of addiction, nobody says it in the obituaries, if you even see their obituaries, because most people are estranged from their families. And so it's such a hidden, hidden thing. I was shocked to find out that the end of 2017, with the opioid epidemic, we have lost more people than the Afghanistan, Iraq, and Vietnam wars combined. That's a lot of people in approximately 10 years. And we're losing them all the time across this country. So I hope you'll take the time to read this. Quickly, I gave you another piece here that's gone through for national standards for sober living residences. And that's one of the issues that he saw as a problem. You'll read about it in the book. It's passed both the House and the Senate, and they're just doing the fine details before it goes to the President for his signature. So thank that you. Gives you that background. Thank you.
Is there anyone else wishing to speak on a community forum item? Seeing none approach, we'll close the community forum. I do want to take a moment and reiterate the purpose and background on community forums, because we have gotten a little lax. I take responsibility for that, because whenever we do have a little extra time, I really want to allow more community input. But again, it's only 30 minutes allowed total for community forum. And as it says right in our minutes, and there's always information in the back about this, it's part of the agenda is reserved for items that which the council has jurisdiction. Speakers are limited to 3 minutes. Please state your name for the record before making your presentation. Comments made during community forum will not be a subject of discussion. And part of that is because we have a lot of rules about what we can talk about in a public process. So as we indicate here, if you do have questions or need information, the best thing is to send an email to the city clerk's office. She will make sure it's distributed to all of us. Gives you a better chance to have any background information. We can have a lot more information. Or even if you do as Jerry Clay did, he kind of had some information to get to us ahead of time. we can have a little more questions that we can ask at that point. But again, it's very limited. It's not an opportunity to really get any business done. It's an opportunity to hear about things that aren't on the agenda that maybe haven't come to our attention, and then we can see if that's something we need to pursue further. And then we can give staff direction at the close of public comment. We don't get into a discussion, or we try not to. So I will try to remind folks that in future because it's a time of year when you know, there's just a lot of questions sometimes. So with that, I think there were some questions raised tonight. Sounds like our city engineer was able to answer some of the questions a gentleman had. I don't want to belabor this tonight, as the city attorney had said, but perhaps unless you have some comments you'd like to make at this time, Mr. Dunsmore, I would request staff kind of bundle up some of the correspondence that you've gotten and then get that to the city manager, and then maybe we can get some kind of enough information to the council so they can be aware what is the issue and what is any complaint that's unresolved, and then council can have a chance to consider that at a future time.
Or if you'd like, Mayor, I'm happy just to give a brief background on
that
the property at your pleasure.
Go ahead.
So Mr. Meeks was granted a conditional use permit by the Planning Commission to construct a large metal accessory structure. We'll call it a big carport for that intent. And at that time, the Commission put on a condition of approval that he comply with the city code, which is you may only park one large commercial vehicle on your property so long as it complies with the city's code and can be demonstrated it does not damage the city road. And that was done because at that time he actually had two very large cranes on the property, parked on the property, and we were concerned that that ongoing issue would damage the city road. So that condition was added, and that's the issue that Mr. Meeks brought up tonight about the Planning Commission.
Let me ask, so is that this is in a residential area or a commercial area?
This is in a residential zoning district on Carmelita Avenue.
Okay. Thank you. And I would say if there's anything different than that the council needs to hear about, I would put it in the form of an email and get it to city clerk, which the city manager would review with council members, and we could see if there's something that needs to be agendized for further discussion. However, once a Planning Commission has heard all of the relevant information and made a decision, there is a process to appeal that decision to the council, and that's an option folks have. Is that correct?
That is correct. That appeal period lasts 14 days from the Planning Commission's decision. This decision was made, it's been a couple of years now, I think, on that particular item.
So it'll be a little late for an appeal of that decision, but
yes.
If there's issues related to that, then at least that's the starting point to say, okay, here a decision was made, and if someone has a question about that, that would be fine to get that to the city clerk for the council's future consideration. I haven't heard anything that would cause that to be agendized for discussion at this point. Is any other council member see a need?
Not unless we have.
No, with the information we have. Okay. With that, we'll move on from the public forum, community forum, and our first management report is the State Route 41 striping update. I believe our city engineer is going to make that report.
I am. Thank you, Mayor O'Malley. Just waiting for the clicker here. So a little bit of background on this project. It's really an exciting project and has an opportunity to really transform Highway 41. As all of you know, when you go down Highway 41 right now, there's a mishmash of different ways vehicles are parked. You have parallel parking, you have angled parking, you have head-end parking, you've got all sorts of different parking, and also the corridor is about 50% fully developed to the 100-foot Caltrans right-of-way. This is a Caltrans roadway, so they do have the ultimate jurisdiction over it. They are currently in the final design phase plan specs.
Mr. Engineer, if I could hold that thought for a moment. If I could ask members of the public, it is Jerry. It's a little distracting up here, the discussion. If you could move that elsewhere, that would be appreciated. Thank you. Yeah. Continue on.
Thank you, Mayor O'Malley. And Caltrans is currently in the final phase plan specs and estimates for the 41 State Highway Operation and Protection Program, otherwise known as SHOP. The primary focus of this $8 million plus project is to really provide pedestrian safety and connectivity, including upgrading ADA accessibility and ramps. And really, you know, there's a lot of disconnected pieces of sidewalk on the corridor. And the nice thing about this project is Caltrans, the budget is more or less unlimited, so they're doing a lot of improvements. Some of these improvements that they're planning on doing, primarily on the northbound side of 41, or what we'll call the south side since it runs east-west, a lot of those undeveloped parcels that have short frontages, they will completely pave out, put curb gutter sidewalk, concrete sidewalk, so the fully developed section they plan on doing. In those areas, let me back up a second, also those open drainage ways that currently exist, they're going to pipe all that, so we're going to have a nice level surface on all those open drainage ways. Those will all be piped. And areas where they're undeveloped parcels that are longer in frontage or have environmental impacts, such as trees, significant trees, they'll still have that 6-foot wide concrete sidewalk constructed, but it might deviate and pull away and be detached from the roadway. The project extends are from El Camino to Portola, and this project is expected to start construction late next year, mid to late next year. Also, as part of this, the city did a complete streets feasibility study in 2016 that examined how can we provide mobility for not only vehicles, but for pedestrians, bicyclists, and really make this a corridor that serves all those needs, as well as the business needs with parking. The study area actually on this was from San Gabriel to El Camino. And really the idea that we were looking at is how can we make that connection from downtown out to the Lake Park complex, to the zoo, and really make that a nice passageway where families could bicycle or walk and you know, feel safe along there as cars are going by at 45 miles per hour. The study was also expanded to go down Atascadero Avenue Mall to the pedestrian tunnel, and so we actually had that as part of the complete streets as an alternative to going through underneath the 101 tunnel and trying to get across El Camino, which is a big wide road. We did apply for the ATB grants for that Atascadero Mall connector. We're still waiting to hear the first round in cycle three. We were unsuccessful, but this last one we just applied for, we should hear in the next month if we were successful or not. I thought we had a good application on that, and I'm hopeful. In the complete street study that the council approved, they had long-term and short-term improvements. The long-term preferred recommendation was to include a two-way or class four cycle track and buffered bike lanes. This would be on the eastbound section between Portola and Atascadero. And then on the westbound or southbound 41, It would be a one-way class two bike lane. Between Atascadero Avenue and El Camino, that would be just conventional bike lanes, one-way bike lanes on each side. We had some short-term or interim recommendations to try to get bike lanes on that corridor that just had conventional bike lanes within the existing pavement areas, no widening. Also had an implementation plan that included like phase one to three-year plan to do the interim striping. But with the SHOP project, we have an opportunity to really get something a lot more closer to the long-term plan. I might make note on the two-way Class 4 bicycle track between Portola and Atascadero Avenue. The complete streets also had as an option to that just having conventional one-way bike lanes, conventional bike Class 2 bike lanes. There was some concerns that the council had and some of the other members of the public with cars pulling out driveways that they might not, you know to look to the right for bicyclists to come on the two-way cycle track. So as an option, we had the conventional bike lanes as an option, the cycle track. This was the map for that complete street study. The purple area is Portola to San Gabriel. That's not part of the SHOP project. They stop at Portola. So this is right from the study. This is a long-term preferred option from El Camino, basically, to Atascadero Avenue. This would be for developed frontages. So you can see there that parking, parallel parking, up against the curb with a bicycle lane or bike lane on there, and then buffered from the travel lanes, and then that center turn lane. This is slightly different as it opens up into four lanes as you get closer to 101, but it's a very similar layout. This would be what's considered segment two in the complete street study. It shows, you know, the median, turf medians there, but that cycle track on the left-hand side, this is looking as you're going out of town towards Morro Bay. But it shows that cycle track as the one preferred option with a buffered area. Here it's shown as a stormwater planter. And then the parallel parking with the travel lanes. Westbound on the right-hand side of the page here, it just shows that conventional bike lane up against the sidewalk and then the angle parking with buffer areas on both sides. And as I mentioned, the cycle track we're not pursuing as part of this project, you know, for the reasons previously mentioned. Then as part of the complete streets, we had these layouts, which I included in the your packet, just for reference. So really, what staff wanted to talk to the council tonight is just have you take a look at these layouts that we're working with Caltrans. These are actually layouts that would be included in their construction package. These are preliminary plans right now, so we'd like to get some feedback from the council and see if you have any concerns or, you know, we're heading down this pretty quick. Caltrans is hoping to be done with the plans by the end of the year. And so with that, I guess I'll just go through these real quick and see if you have any questions. So this is starting actually at Portola, and this is going to be going from left to right. There's nine slides here. But Portola there, you can see the left turn pockets, and this is kind of typical where we come up and approach intersections is the left turn lane actually goes against the curb, and the bike lane will meander out in between the through lane and the right turn lane. This is so there's less conflict. So if a car is waiting to take a right on Portola, and they're waiting for other cars to come through the intersection, they're usually looking to the left, and they might not see if there's a bike lane to your right. They might run right into a person on a bike. So that's why we kind of bring these bike lanes and split the through lane and the right turn lane. You can see on the other on the bottom of that plan, the bike lane up against the curb and gutter, and a buffered parallel parking lane. So this again, this is going from we'll call west to east or south to north. So coming into town. Here you can see some of the undeveloped parcels. I know this is kind of hard to see, but the on the top there, the on that undeveloped parcel, they actually there's a blue line that's the back of the sidewalk, and then a black line which is the inside of the sidewalk. So it deviates and it'll basically detach from the roadway. That green line on these plans are the bike lane. That's I think the main thing to kind of focus on. We plan on painting some of this green, but probably not the whole thing. But for this exhibit, we just had it all green so you could see that a little bit better. But again, it kind of transitions through here, and as these properties, you know, come forth and develop, they'll be conditioned to, you know, construct that full, you know, paved area with to match the existing. For the most part, these parking lanes, there's not really going to be any loss of parking except near intersections. So one example of that is on the bottom right here. As that's, I think, the old county building. I think that Atascadero Unified now owns. I think it was the old maybe special education building. But right there is a good example. Currently, they have parking along the curb. Maybe, no, this is probably good. This is on the very bottom right. They currently have parking along the curb and gutter that they are going to lose as part of this layout because, again, that bike lane needs to meander, split the through lane and the right turn lane for those safety reasons. However, there's in this case and the other case, we're up near Atascadero Avenue where Wysong Construction, that building, they have ample amount of parking in the back. And there's very few cars, especially at the school building, that actually use the on-street parking. I've actually stopped and talked to Wysong Construction to get their input on this. And I know Larry wasn't too concerned about cars losing the parking on the street. And another one here is Moore's Nursery. I stopped by there as well and waiting to hear or talk to them. But they'll have... They're utilizing some of that parking way off the road, and this will be a little different for them. So we're working with Moore's Nurseries as well to make sure that they get as much parking and ingress egress as possible.
Question on Moore's Nursery area there. They do have the parking considerably off of the road. I wasn't sure how much paving was going to, if that's going to be widened, would that be widened enough to actually pave that area they use for parking? So they actually wouldn't be losing any parking.
Correct. Well, you can see in this, the photo there where on the bottom it says no park in that little strip on the left. That's Moore's Nursery right there, and they've got two entrances. You can see the vehicles actually park in a head-end fashion or perpendicular fashion. So they're using a lot of that, but this is a good example. This and next door, Madrones, which is right to the right, all of that will be fully built out to the fully developed standard. A lot of the south side of the corridor will have be fully built out at the end of this project, but they will perhaps lose some on-street parking because right now they're utilizing it as a head-on parking, which will be disallowed after this project. I don't. Did that answer your question, Mayor?
Well, I guess will there continue to be frontage parking in front of Moore's?
There will be. Not as much as they have right now.
It'll be parallel instead of perpendicular.
Correct.
Thank you.
Just kind of moving along here. You can, again, see how this bike lane kind of jogs in and out. A lot of undeveloped parcels. This is AJ's diner on the, or the old Gerhardt development that is on the bottom left there as a reference. Kerberill is intersection on the left. I'll just, you know, these undeveloped parcels, they're, again, the sidewalk will detach, you know, in those longer stretches where there's undeveloped parcels. Shorter frontages of undeveloped parcels will generally be paved out to the full 100-foot width.
So along AJ's, for example, that's going to be fully built out, and you'll have cement sidewalks where cement sidewalks are supposed to go gutter, and then will there be any parking there? That'll be no parking along there.
That'll be no parking. I know currently there's some cars that park right there along that current sidewalk, and I'm not sure we still could allow that. These are preliminary. We're working with Caltrans. They have the ultimate say in what can and can't be done out there. But there won't be any parallel parking, and there's no parking right now. But as those parcels develop and have frontage improvements done, they'll gain that parallel parking in front of each of those.
But I assume any place that we're putting in concrete sidewalks, curb and gutter, that will be really at maximum build out. So it's not, it doesn't have to change in the future if adjoining parcels build out. It'll all be aligned someday when everyone completes their frontage.
Correct. And that's the nice thing about this, is this is one of those projects where you can't really rely on development to kind of do it. It's like a system. So you need to make sure that bike lanes are and sidewalks are contiguous and have the right connections and the right tapers and the right meanders and everything. So, you know, as they developed, in fact, in the areas where the concrete separates from the, or detaches from the road, there won't be curb and gutter. It'll still be the rural section. So they'll have to do those improvements as they you know.
Another question.
Sure. Nick, since we're doing questions, when you mentioned the blue line is really the sidewalk, and you mentioned that in some instances, as it would appear right here in front of AJ's on this particular slide, the sidewalk is actually off the street. And so the mayor was talking about curb and gutter. So in these instances where the sidewalk is off the street, will there be a, there will not be a gutter then, I assume, because you're going to have sidewalk and a little bit of dirt before you have pavement, but will there be some sort of a gutter between?
There will be no gutter in these instances.
In this particular instance,
right.
Okay. And then if you could back up this, back over to Moore's. So there's a small amount of parallel parking in front of their property under this design. Not much, because they got the two ingress and egress driveways, which as a nursery is kind of important because, you know, you pull in there and, you know, you want to load a, you know, 15-gallon tree or something. So it looks like there's actually, even with all of this improvement, there's actually still enough room for people to do head-in parking at that particular location, based on the photograph here, the overhead photograph?
That actually, that frontage will have curb and gutter, so that will have a...
okay, so they wouldn't be able to drive over the curb and gutter and
right.
Park where you see those vehicles.
But they could,
as we speak.
They could potentially park there, but just rotate at 90 degrees.
Sure.
And you could maybe get two spots there, maybe have employee parking or something else there.
And since, in some cases, the sidewalks are off the pavement, if you will, and when those properties ultimately are developed with something most likely commercial, that's what most of this is, and the owner would then have to do the usual widening, would that realign whole segments of bike lane? Would it require redoing, you know, tearing up and redoing pieces of sidewalk more than just driveway entrances? Or what would happen if you take any one of these given photos and say where there's a vacant lot, and say it was developed, what would...
Sure. Let's maybe look at AJ's property here. And, you know, there's a... I think it's an apartment complex just to the right of it. So if AJ's came in, they decided to tear that down and, you know, build something new, and they have to do frontage improvements, they would build that out. They would probably remove the sidewalk that Caltrans is building there that's detached, and then put in the full 100-foot width up to their property line, and then they'd have to taper it back and match in to the next property that does not have the full developed frontage.
Did any of that involve moving the newly installed or newly painted bike lanes?
In this case, yeah, if they're not buffered like the fully developed areas, then yeah, they'll have to repaint all that, and that's pavement marking at this point. So it's relatively cheap. There's areas here that we will have to widen. The city will, you know, we're trying to utilize the existing pavement as much as possible, or the new pavement that Caltrans ends up putting in. But there are areas that, like in this area here, it says further widening. Those are areas that we might just have to widen the existing edge of pavement a foot or two to accommodate those bike lanes. And we'll be responsible for the cost of those. But, you know, for the most part, it's pretty minimal cost compared to what we're getting out of
this project. I was more concerned about, you know, having to redo this, some of these nice things that Caltrans is doing, and having, you know, requiring property owners to tear up fairly new things. And so... Normally, if they weren't doing this, if somebody wanted to develop, we'd say, well, you've got to widen the road and put in a straight sidewalk. And for some reasons, for Caltrans reasons, they didn't want to reopen environmental documents, as I understand it. That's partly why the sidewalks meander in and under the trees and stuff.
Correct.
As opposed to a straight line, which I actually think is more attractive. If you're walking down, you know, a half mile of sidewalk, it's more appealing to do a little bit of this than it is to stare straight down 1,000 feet of, you know, bare concrete. And so I would hope that even though that's not the norm, it actually is attractive, and that when somebody does develop these parcels, it would be within our latitude just to let them keep the sidewalk as is, even though it's not our norm. Would that be correct?
We don't really have an adopted plan line on this, but for the, you know, when we've had other there's a recent doctor that bought a parcel, and McDonald's recently did some antenna improvements that exceed, you know, triggered frontage improvements. And we are making them do the full, you know, full width. This is one of the things, too, that Caltrans has a say in, so they need to get an encroachment permit from Caltrans when they do any frontage improvements on this, and or any driveway accesses. So it's one of those things, you know, right now the developed, fully developed section on this is, you know, the full pavement. This was really planned to be a four-lane highway, and, you know, the traffic counts, projected traffic counts don't support four lanes, and that's why we're trying to repurpose a lot of this pavement. But there would be, I guess we haven't really thought about that too much, but there could be an opportunity where you could keep that meandering sidewalk. You know, if you wanted to do that on the parcels, I think it would be one of those things. You know, do you want this a consistent corridor, you know, with the fully developed pavement out to the sidewalk, or do you want to have some opportunities for greenery? You know, you could still maybe have some, turf medians in here that provide that. I don't know if that answers your question, but...
It sounds like we'd have some flexibility and not wouldn't be stuck with a rigid straight-line sidewalk if we didn't want to go that
correct.
Way.
Correct. I think we could...
Thank you.
We could kind of, like, figure that out as these developments come in, but... And that's something that we still need to talk to the community development about. This is an opportunity right now to get what we... You know, have Caltrans and get something out of this project that's going to really benefit the city. And, you know, what we do on these undeveloped parcels in the future, I guess we can cross that bridge when we get there.
Thank you. Chief, keep an eye on him. Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie.
Thank you.
Just a question regarding the drainage swales that are currently there on Morrow Road. Those are within the right-of-way of Highway 41? Because some of them look like there's a property line right there, and maybe trees or outbuildings are in that area, correct?
Some of these, Caltrans is part of their project. They're going to have to get temporary construction easements from these abutting properties just to be able to do grading or, like, you know, for instance, if there's a drainage way and they're going to pipe it, they're going to have to do grading to kind of make it nice and smooth. So they're working on all of that. That's something we don't have to worry about.
Well, the drainage swales, it would seem, if they're just going to put in a pipe and cover it over, the drainage may actually come towards Highway 41 from somewhere else. Is this going to require drains that we put in or they put in, or is this just going to cover a pipe and call it good?
No, they'll be putting in catch basins as part of this to capture all the water that would run off, both currently and in the future. So their
That's
hydrology is going to, you know, is planned to capture all the, my understanding, the fully developed paved areas.
And so they would be responsible for the maintenance on that afterwards?
Yes, they will. Yep.
Very good.
The only thing we would be responsible for long-term maintenance on this particular project would be the green paint that we choose to put down. So pretty minor in the long term. During the complete street studies, when we were looking at some of these options like this, Caltrans would require us to enter into a maintenance agreement for all those median areas, all the trees, these stormwater planters, all of that. And so that before they would allow us to construct any of this. Now, we're not limited. In the future, we could still do all these improvements if we chose to. But for the scope of this project, really the long-term maintenance is only the green paint.
Very good. And could you refresh my memory on what a Class 2 bike lane is and how that might be different than a Class 1?
A Class 2 bike lane is kind of the old-school conventional bike lane. In this particular photo, it would be the one on the right-hand side where it's just a one-way anywhere from 4 to 6 feet, typically, bike lane that's not detached from the road, so it's contiguous with the pavement. The Class 4 bike lane, on the other hand, is the one on the left-hand side of this photo, where it's a two-way, cycle track is another term they use. And a Class 1 is like more of a separated, detached pathway.
Okay, and so when you speak of buffers, you don't necessarily mean they have to be a stormwater planter or a curb or other with trees. It could actually just be striping.
It could be striping, and in this project, it will be striping.
Thank you.
And my understanding is Caltrans will maintain all that striping. I hope I'm right.
Thank you. Well, that's our understanding. It's probably one of the best design projects we've had in a long time. It was the intersection of two state highways. We've certainly lobbied for this at SLOCOG for many years, and I'm very pleased to see our progress. Why don't you continue on, and
sure.
we'll just take questions as they come up. I'll look for council lights and let them inject in, and probably just a short answer on each question, and I think it's mainly just a quick clarifying question would be all we would have. Continue.
Will do. Thank you. This is approaching now Atascadero Avenue on the right. The Weisong building is right there on the bottom, so you can see that's another area where we would have to eliminate some of the parking just to get that right turn pocket in there. One thing we are proposing here that's a little different is the westbound lane as you approach Atascadero Avenue. Currently, there is not a right turn lane there, but we're proposing one just from all the school traffic that can get in there. We think it's just a good idea. I don't know why there's not one there now. I think it's because of that open drainage way. So once that gets covered up, this will be able to accommodate that. And this is where it kind of starts getting a little goofy. Not goofy, just different, I guess. Where now you start having the parallel parking against the sidewalk, curb and gutter, as it gets a little busier here as you approach 101. This would be more of that, let me just back up, what we'll call the segment one section here. So it becomes more the bike lanes now are buffered from the parallel parking against the curb and the through lane. And again, few undeveloped parcels are there on the north side, well, on the south as well, that, you know, will eventually develop as part of this. I think this is really a project that should spur economic development along the corridor as well, because there's a lot of these properties that are currently undeveloped or prime for redevelopment that will have full frontage improvements done as part of this project. So it's a real benefit to anybody that owns those properties or would buy them that they don't even have to mess around with that. Now, as you approach the southbound off-ramps here, and this is the 101 overpass, one of the things we had, and we're still waiting to hear from Caltrans if they're going to allow this to happen or not, but on the bottom of this bottom right-hand side of this photo, as you come underneath the bridge approaching El Camino, and you get into that right turn pocket, you know, to either go northbound on 101 or go south on El Camino, it turns into two right turn lanes. And there's actually a signal there that, you know, honestly, when I moved here, it was probably 6 months before, you know, I went through this all the time. It's like, wow, there's a signal here because you never see it because of the bridge. But anyway, so what one of the complete streets ideas was to actually eliminate the rightmost right turn lane just to allow that not to be such a big paved area, sea of asphalt to cross. So this would really be more for pedestrian safety. And Caltrans will, you know, we've evaluated this. The traffic counts don't support having two right turn lanes there. That being said, Caltrans still might not like this idea, so this is just one of the things I wanted to point out for the council, just and maybe get some feedback what you think about this. It's really meant so there's not two lanes of traffic for pedestrians to cross. Any feedback on that?
I had a question for you. And when I first saw this diagram, what I was curious about is the bike lane. So the bike lane goes straight, but if you are wanting to turn, if you were on a bicycle and you wanted to turn right to go southbound on El Camino, there's no cutover for the bike lane, if you will. Because if you're going to use up some of that space, it seems like you'd just make it easier for bikes to make that transition as well. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know much about traffic, but just a question.
Okay. Yeah, I think, so you're saying if you wanted a bicyclist was wanted to go southbound on El Camino, how would they get through this? Is that?
Well, I mean, they'd have to cut across that right turn lane somewhere. Mm-hmm. And whether or not if you're going to give up part of that turn lane, maybe they need a little green lane there as well.
Right, and this is really kind of, the green lane there is meant for bicyclists that are continuing on 41. But, and I think it's one of those things that could either go up to that island and then the smaller island there and then head south. That's one option. I think if I was riding a bike, I'd probably just end up getting on that right turn.
Well, this is right at the El Camino Highway 41 101 interchange, and this is part of why we're getting so much funding on this whole project is this is really not a good design. Caltrans is aware of it. This is kind of a temporary striping that's going to improve it, and maybe we can eliminate a lane. But I think the goal is, certainly for us and for Caltrans, is to reroute bicycle traffic
down Atascadero Avenue and would eliminate this as a bicycle route. Is that correct? That's the goal longer term?
Yeah, that's right on Mayor O'Malley. This is actually, this wouldn't, that island or elimination of the rightmost right turn pocket there, I would expect that to be almost a concrete, like a bump out or an island there, and not temporary striping per se. And then just have one right turn pocket through there. And then once they get around that, then they can split either to go northbound 101 or to keep going south on El Camino.
Relative to bikes, though, going down Atascadero Avenue and coming out under the Ped Tunnel works for coming to downtown or going north, but not for going south.
If you're asking about the bulbout as for pedestrians, whether you walk across two lanes or one, I've walked through there and it's, I don't think it's unsafe, but the cars actually, when you get two cars side by side going, making those right turns, sometimes one on the inside is going to Vaughn, sometimes the other one's going to the freeway. From that perspective, it could be a little safer, but as for walking for a pedestrian, it's not unsafe.
And they do have a push, like a crosswalk button there. So, like I mentioned, we haven't heard anything from Caltrans on this particular proposal. And I'll keep you updated on that. But
we have a question from Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie.
I don't know whether it's possible to make the sidewalk wider there and stripe it up the middle, one side for bikes and one for pedestrians, or something to get them off the street, because that's the worst area, I would say, for a bicycle to be. Would that work? Is that something they would entertain?
I think that could work. Yeah, it's... And in some of these high traffic areas, you'll get the bicyclists that actually get on the sidewalk as well, just to get out of the traffic.
Right. It's not too uncommon to see these in Europe where they just stripe them up the middle and you know where you're supposed to be, but you don't see them too often here.
Right. No, that's a very good idea.
We'll continue on then.
Well, that comes to the end of the layouts.
Perfect.
So the recommendation was just to review the layouts and provide any feedback you might have.
Let's go to further council questions before we open it up to the public. Go ahead.
Actually, Mayor, you might know the answer to this more so, and that is this is a Caltrans funded, which is great, but did this go through the SLOCOG process?
We greatly lobbied for this one and met with Caltrans on numerous occasions.
Okay. I just didn't see any mention of whether it went through the SLOCOG prioritization process.
This is something that we could prioritize our advocacy for, but this is a competitive grant that we applied for. And I think Caltrans, you want to get a little background, because it actually goes back a couple of years.
Yeah, and this is actually as part of the SHOP program funds. This is a Caltrans, funded project that's part of the Regional Transportation Improvement Plan. So
okay.
It did go through that whole SLOCOG process. It's been on the list. They're doing other similar projects on other highways around here. This particular money is kind of like a fix-it first type of thing and really trying to improve accessibility for pedestrians. They really are focused on the ADA component for people that walk, not so much bicyclists. What we're bringing to this and lobbying, and I know Mayor O'Malley and myself and Ron DeCarli met with the District 5 director, was that last fall, I believe, Mayor, correct? And, we lobbied for this, these bicycle lanes. They're doing the current project right now, which is a maintenance project. They're doing a mill and overlay. In fact, they're doing all the work at night, so you don't even really see it during the day, but you'll have probably 20 trucks out there right now. But that project, we really wanted to get some of the bike lanes in there, but it was a little problematic for their maintenance department to accommodate that. But what we really advocated for is like, okay, well, that's fine, but with the SHOP project, we really advocated for these buffered bike lanes because that's what's really going to provide a long-term benefit.
We had about four different categories of money trying to kind of weave together to get a long-term goal, and that's what makes it a little bit confusing, because the striping is like one issue. We just didn't want to kind of stripe and miss the opportunity to make it a little bit better on the interim.
Right.
So that was one discussion with Caltrans. But the bigger piece, and I think, you know, sometimes I would get questions like, why are we advocating for bicycle lanes and ADA stuff? Well, that's how we got it all fixed. This is like a $8 or $9 million grant that's going to fill in all those trenches and holes in the ground with culvert, cover them over, sidewalk them, expand the width of the road, and it will provide more safety for bicycles, pedestrians, ADA accessibility. But it really cleans up all of Highway 41. It's as you had mentioned, it's quite a boon for property owners all along there. It really opens up potential development. So we were very fortunate to see that happen. But it, again, we remind folks, this is one of the few places you've got an intersection of two state highways. That's what makes this a priority. It was a Caltrans priority, and we were able to shape it to some multiple benefits for our community.
And I might add as well, Mayor O'Malley was very good at with SLOCOG, and this was a competitive process, we have $168,000 towards the city improvements on this project. So, right now, we haven't ran full cost estimates yet, but I'm pretty confident that $168,000, based on what we know right now, it should hopefully cover the majority of these costs, if not all.
So that's a pretty good leveraging, $168,000
for 7 or 8 million?
Yeah.
So you can see kind of how these things are coming together with this project. If you have the Atascadero Avenue Mall connector with the ATP grant, if that goes, then that'll be another component.
Right.
The Complete Streets project on, the downtown traffic calming.
And we really went through a visioning process as a community years ago where we had a vision of basically having pedestrian bicycle connectors from really our community center all the way to Lake Park Zoo and connecting every school. And we've utilized over the years multiple sources of funding for the Safe Routes to School, connecting always a little bit more of a chunk on this passageways. I think staff has done a very good job of looking for opportunities, again, with a big picture long-term vision, but we've pieced it together with lots of different funding sources. This is just a major improvement to be able to get this 41 connector completed. So I'm very excited about it, and I think we are very fortunate. No, if there's no other council questions, we'll go to the public.
You just prompted me to have one more question.
Sure. Well, I'm not going to say anything else. So,
there you go. The mayor has mentioned more than once the idea to have alternative transportation, bike and pedestrian, all the way to the lake park. This project ends at Portola. Is there, and so that's kind of the end of what Caltrans is doing. Is there any thought in mind as to how you're going to go that last 100 feet across Portola with, in terms of bike accessibility?
So this slide right here kind of shows the end. Now, keep in mind, Caltrans has, their plans have, this is kind of a conceptual layout that our consultant came up with staff. But they, when you say that last 100 feet.
Well, I mean, you got to cross Portola now and get to the lake park. Not a big deal. But is there any
well, remember that very nice separated bicycle lanes we have down to San Gabriel. There's this missing piece right on the corner of Portola.
Right.
And I think they've made some interim improvements, but I think until that gets fully developed there, that could be dependent upon private development. It could be one of those things that the city wanted to prioritize. It certainly, the fact that we've connected everything and this is the last little missing piece, there, I would say there's a potential to apply for funding for that.
And this this aerial photo does not show the multi-purpose path that the city recently constructed in front of.
It's just
shows the beginning
to the left,
right there.
Right,
yeah.
On the upper left-hand corner, yeah. Which, if you think about it, to get out to the Three Bridges Oak Preserve.
Yes.
You know, that's a great route right there. You take that detached path along the creek, you get up to San Gabriel, cross a bridge, take a left on Carmelita, and you can actually, there's actually a public right-of-way that goes all the way out to the other section of Carmelita by what I call the illegal creek crossing, where you can connect up there. But there's actually a pathway that you can ride and walk all the way up.
You heard it right here from the city engineer on public television.
Otherwise known as. But, yeah, that pathway is used quite a bit, and it's a great connection. You actually get away from the cars as they speed up at that point, you know, and start gaining more speed as they're heading out to Morro Bay. So
let's go ahead. Do you have any other council questions? I'll go ahead and open it up to the public.
Hi, Susan Funk from Atascadero, and so I seem to be representing the public today. A couple of quick questions on this with respect to, we've talked about the managing traffic but to create pedestrian and bicycle connection between downtown and the park. I'm also interested in connecting, in particular, traffic to and from the high school, where we've got a group of things. Our densest populated areas of town are south of this project. And so we have kids, if we want safe access for the kids who might bike to school through this thing, they're going to need to be able to move. You know, going back and forth in Atascadero Avenue is not really going to help them, that aspect. We need to make sure that they've got a safe connection to El Camino, where we're working very hard in the El Camino traffic calming plan to create safe bike transit along El Camino. I'm looking to how it connects to through that very busy section in front of Vaughn's where cars are moving around and getting ready to enter the freeway. So I wanted to see how that connection works and how we maintain bicycle safety until we can get them past that freeway entrance and into a safer section. And also then how the bike transit works best coming from the south as you're heading towards the high school. What's the safe route that will be created with this? And I'll sit down so that you can address that. Thank you.
Thank you. That is that missing piece. We have a very good plan for it. It's like a roundabout at the base of the high school. That will connect in multiple directions in a sense. But I think that's the beauty of this project, which was, again, basically a Caltrans project rerouting traffic right to the base of our high school. And then this other funding that we could basically then complete that connection to El Camino through the head bridge and also potentially around to Traffic Way, I suppose, because it's just lighter traffic there compared to a 41-101 interchange. But I think we are very competitive for this grant. We've kind of kept an eye on it quite a bit at SLOCOG, and it certainly is on the priority list that we've been able to get support from our fellow electeds on the SLOCOG board. So I think so much depends on what state funding looks like after the first of the year. And I don't know if you want to add anything to that. I think the plan is very well done and in place. It's just a question of, and I think we're very much at the top of the list on next in line, so to speak. It just depends on a few funding variables that could really drastically change come January.
Right. And in this map here, you know, this was a complete streets corridor. That green area, that green corridor in the upper portion of this that kind of jogs over, that actually is Atascadero Avenue and Mall and utilizing the tunnels. So we applied for an ATP, Active Transportation Grant, Last cycle, we scored second best in the county after the Bob Jones Trail with our first entry. One big difference on this cycle is that the previous cycle they just had one category, so we're competing against everybody. This particular ATP grant cycle, they have small, medium, and large projects, so they're going to be funding projects in these different categories. We happen to fit into the, small project, which is under $1.5 million. So, you know, we're not competing against these ginormous projects in Chico or Sacramento or Los Angeles. So I think it's a little more fair and balanced with the funding. It seemed to me, you know, this is my observation, is a lot of the really big projects that last cycle were, you know, that were awarded money were larger projects, and I'm not sure if that had anything to do with it's easier to just, you know, any project there's going to be a minimal level of effort that you need to maintain on it, but if you can have maybe 20 projects versus 50 projects, you know, it's a lot easier to manage even the bigger projects. So just an observation I had.
Well, and I think, too, I don't want to belabor the point, there is quite a bit to the lobbying effort. I was able to meet personally with the executive director for the California Transportation Commission, and they want to spread the wealth around as well, too. I think they like to see multiple projects. They were encouraged by our region, who split up priorities into smaller projects and also prioritized them at a local level. Big cities don't do that. They just say, we want all the money. And that used to work better at the state level. Now I think, you know, the whole organization wants to make sure everyone sees the benefit. And so I think that works in our favor. So I'm optimistic as we can be. And I think at Caltrans, also at the SLOCOG level, we've gone through how do we prioritize things given tough times, and some of the things that we agree on as a local board is, well, rather than kind of waiting for years as you accumulate enough money for a big project, maybe we can get something done sooner, especially if it's kind of like the culmination of here's a lot of pieces we've been able to put together. I remind folks that, for example, part of this whole linkage is that at first connector at San Gabriel, it was this council that voted to approve and pay for a signal light on a state highway. That hardly ever happens, but we said, yeah, we're going to put $400,000, I believe, of our hard-earned money to connect that missing link, so to speak, when Caltrans didn't want to do it. But that made us very competitive then for the Safe Routes to School from Morrill Road all the way to San Gabriel, for that grant for connecting out to along where we have a true separated bike lane. And it certainly looked good for us as a community in applying for these other. So I think we've positioned ourselves to be very competitive, and I think we've done what we can do. Staff have been very good at making sure we ask for anything that would possibly could fit together in this kind of a mosaic we've put together to connect our town together and making it safer for our kids. Any other? We have no more public questions. We'll close public comment, bring it back. And I will go ahead and move we adopt staff's recommendation.
Second.
And I have a motion by Mayor O'Malley, second by Councilmember Sturdivant. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Sturdivant.
Yes.
Councilmember Borbeau.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie.
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley.
Yes.
Motion passes.
Thank you. We'll move on to a council announcements and reports. I keep trying to sometimes make it purist. Let's do announcements first and committee reports, and then sometimes, well, just mix them together. Certainly for tonight,
let's just take it, whatever you'd like to have to say. Councilmember Burbeau first.
I'll make it easy on you. I have no announcements and I have no committee reports. Although I am going to meet with Mr. Giancola, the interim director of the IWMA, later this week.
Good.
To get myself oriented.
Yes, we have for some time been trying to transition Councilmember Burbeau taking over the Integrated Waste Management Authority board position. I've, for various reasons, have had to continue on. When they were short on board members, I filled in on the executive committee for 6 months. Then Styrofoam came up, then this and that, but we've finally, I think, got it to where it's a clean handoff with not leaving you in too big of a mess to deal with. Thank you. They are in the process of hiring a new executive director. We have an interim executive director. They'll be getting a new legal firm. There's quite a bit of transition that's going on, but since it's such a lot of policy issues, and to use Mr. Burbeau's own phrases when he ran for city council, he's kind of a policy wonk, so this is a real opportunity for you to jump into a lot of policy issues. So thank you for taking that on. Councilman Sturdivant and Mayor Pro Tem.
Well, I'll be the other end of the book and no announcement, no report. So
okay, we'll work down to Roberta. And
no announcement, no report.
Okay, well, Roberta is going to cover the next countywide mayor's meeting for me, as that's on the day before Colony Days, and I have to give third-grade tours of this building, which I would rather do than go to the mayor's meeting. Thank you for covering for that. The last mayor's meeting, there were a number of things discussed, but one issue I brought up again, which I just bring up to the public's attention again, we've had some real challenges dealing with the alcohol, beverage, and control state-level organization with some of their interpretation of rules related to some of our restaurants, and it's really interfering with the potential of building apartments in the downtown. There's rules on the book that basically say you can't have a bar open past 10 o'clock if you've got apartments within, I think, 100 feet or some fairly small distance. And that's hit a few restaurants. That's now starting to fall over into other cities. And it's really a problem because why would we want to approve more apartments in the downtown area, for example, if that means restaurants have to shut down their bars early or even serving alcohol at all, maybe even as early as 9 o'clock? That's a real hindrance and a kind of a catch-22. So we've met with Assemblyman Cunningham, who's very supportive. I've met with the director up in Sacramento, the head of the state level, and we are pursuing some, trying to get out a compromise at a local level that's not working. We're going to be working on preparing legislation that would be an alternative. I think it's going to be supported by League of California Cities and all kinds of folks because they folks actually feel Governor Brown is sensitive to it, because if you take this on, it actually interferes with housing development and density issues in downtown areas. So we're taking this serious. I'm meeting with a California small business organization this Friday with Jordan. And with that, if there's no objection by the council, I would like to form a ad hoc committee to kind of carry through on this project and have a couple folks continue on so we have some other folks besides me kind of get up to speed on this issue, because it may take a few months. You had a comment or question?
I did have a comment. And just because it's going to still take some people by surprise, but Colony Days has moved up this year, and so it's not this coming weekend, but next, the following weekend, which is 2 weeks earlier than normal. So make sure everybody realizes that and has Colony Days on their minds. It's, I forgot to wear my button tonight.
You see, already forgot to wear your button. Okay. So that's one issue related with the countywide mayor's issue. And the other thing that I wanted to mention, if I find my piece of paper here, the
Good news, we just heard today that the Regional Transportation Authority was awarded $6.2 million Department of Transportation grant that's going to go towards this building project of a new bus terminal. This is quite a big boost that helps all of us, and we're also very competitive for another grant that could really take a big chunk out of planned for costs on a building, which could help on some other issues with RTA. So we're very excited to hear about that, and we did get support at the federal level, and we did hear from Mr. Carbajal, and actually our state senators did help with this. We received, if I can find the abbreviated version, I believe this is the largest amount ever given in the state of California. So we were very fortunate to get that at our own Regional Transportation Authority. So that is the main items. I did want to, on a more local personal note, I did receive notice today, for those of you that knew Barbara Norris, who served as the city's second elected city clerk, also served on the city council from 1984 to 98, and included 1 year as mayor in that period, I believe. She passed away yesterday evening at the age of 72, and so was also a graduate of Atascadero High School. So we want to offer our condolences to her family. And I think that is it. Any staff reports? Or
the ad hoc committee, did you want to do anything about that, or are you just bringing it up as something we'll need to address down the road?
I only bring it up because I've been taking the lead on this. I have pulled in Mayor Martin from Paso because it now affects a business in Paso Robles. And it will be primarily dealing with Assemblyman Cunningham and probably Senator Monning. I would like to have an ad hoc committee of Mark Derez from the Planning Commission, being an architect, his experience dealing with some of the zoning and issues we're going to have to deal with, and Heather Moreno, and then I will stick with it as long as I can, but then it'll be up to the next council to see what to do with it. But I want to kind of get a couple people up to speed pretty quick. We have the benefit that Councilman Fonzie's actually had professional experience with this a little bit, dealing in the real estate, kind of understand some of the technicalities dealing with the business licenses with alcohol issues. So I think it's very important, and it will really have ramifications if we don't get this clarified soon, because it'll certainly impact your decision-making about approving apartments in the downtown and future restaurants. If they kind of, it turns out that they're going to have limitations compared to existing restaurants, that'll be a challenge. So we kind of have to win this one, so I want to stay on top of it. So if there's no objection, I see this as a, you know, kind of an interim couple of month thing, and you'll have this reported back by someone other than me probably in a month or two. Very good. Any other items to report? Very good. So, Chief, did the city engineer behave himself this evening? Did not. Very okay. Well, thank you for helping him out through this evening. And with that, we'll adjourn.